Welcome to Transformers, the podcast about how business people and policymakers are creating a sustainable future. I'm your host, Kai Embren.
Today, my guests are three experts and advisors in the capital markets in Europe and US. We will be debating strategies for pension funds in the time of climate crisis. We will be talking about ways in which these funds can help create a sustainable society. Mats Andersson is a former CEO of AP4 pension fund in Sweden and the first one 8 years ago to decarbonize investments. Mats was the front runner taking pension funds into a sustainable roadmap, proving that green investment is profitable. He has also worked closely with the United Nations to raise awareness of risks that climate change brings to finance and investment. In 2018, he was appointed by the Swedish government to create the strategy for green bonds development. Gregory Wendt is from Santa Monica, California, and he has more than 30 years of experience in the capital markets and sustainable finance. He advises and consults for investors, leaders, think tanks, families of wealth on strategies to achieve the alignment between economics, finance and the sustainable development goals. He also leads the California Capital Markets Task Force. And Nick Schrammick, Director of International Relations at Silicon Valley Forum. Nick has served as Program and Knowledge Director for the Pacific Pension and Investment Institute, an educational organization based in San Francisco that assists corporations, pension funds, and financial institutions. I would like to welcome my guests, Mats Andersson, Gregory Wendt, and Nick Schrammick. We are now in the time when we see a California on fire. I will start to ask all three, Greg, Mats, and Nick, on your views on the climate lessons of the fires and how should pension funds react? Greg, can you comment that?
Well, that's a really broad and an important question right now in terms of how we use the resources we have in our pensions and in the capital markets to improve the way that humanity interacts with the biosphere. And forests, of course, are very much part of the life support system here on Earth, considering the ecosystem services, the watersheds, the air, and the resources we draw from forests globally. Obviously, many of us are very aware of the importance of integrity of forests. So similarly, with respect to what we do with their long-term pension assets for the viability of the retirees and the people that are pension beneficiaries, but also for future generations in general, we really need to look at investing in these assets as the very life support system that we work with, and managing forests in changing environments. For example, the precipitation here in California has changed such that the types of forests and the types of trees that we would be seeing in forests may change over time. And then we need to nuance our financial and economic development and forest management strategies to be attuned to what's actually going on in these ecosystems, and then invest in such a manner that we benefit both economically and systemically, and then therefore provide returns back to pensions, which both meet the needs of future generations for the sake of healthy forests, but also financially for the retirees.
Hmm. Nick, do you have any comments on that?
Sure, and I agree with what Greg was just saying. And what I would add is just that investors really need to embrace systems thinking to benefit their communities and the world. Both governments and investors shouldn't be afraid to explore novel solutions. And these solutions should both address the problem we have at hand as well as developing long-term solutions. So the problem at hand is what to do with the fires and the climate crisis that is now at our doorstep. One example is forest resiliency bonds that are being developed here in California. This product seeks to lower the risk of destructive wildfires by shifting forest restoration costs from the state and federal level to private investors. But the real hope is that these fires will continue a broader conversation on the power of pension fund assets and the transformational change that they can provide communities.
Mm-hmm. Some European eyes on this, Mats?
Thank you. Even though California is far away, I still believe that we understand what's happening. And to me, it's a failure for the system that it happens. And it shows again that if we don't mitigate climate change, it will hit us one way or the other. And this will actually hit pension funds on their assets that they invested in California. Mm. So again, it was a mispriced risk. And hopefully, as Nick pointed out, this will actually make pension funds more concerned. And hopefully you can come up with products. Because I still believe that if you deal with climate change or any sustainability risk, it's not about charity, it's not about giving away money. It's actually mitigating risk and over time getting better returns.
Let's go into the first really question that I put up in the program and to give us an insight of the different views of circumstances between the American and the European system. So Nick, can you explain the similarities and difference between the American and European pension funds policies and regulation regarding ESG?
Sure, I'll do my best. While impact in ESG continues to rise in the US, there are several institutional limitations that have prevented further expansion. The Department of Labor is quite conservative when it comes to their reforming their policies around pension funds. This is part of the ERISA policies, Employee Retirement Income Security Act. So just in June, they reaffirmed that employer-sponsored retirement plans are not for furthering social goals or environmental goals, but rather retirement security for their workers. But where this fails is that the U.S. rules conflate ESG integration strategies with impact investing. So I think step one is to disentangle values-driven investing, which prioritizes impact over returns, and value-driven investing, which incorporates material ESG factors alongside traditional financial metrics. ESG issues are becoming more significant, not just with the rise of data and transparency tools allowing us to quantify the impact of these factors, but also shifts in business models where intangible assets like brand value and employee engagement need to be taken into account. We are firmly in the knowledge economy, but still relying on financial mechanisms of an industrialized economy. So this is particularly true with the long-term horizons of pension funds. A Department of Labor should allow for a long-term investment focus of value creation instead of quarterly returns. Fixing this will require creating certainty around what is material and non-material and needs to be created in conversation with policymakers, pension fund sponsors, portfolio managers, and standard setters like the Sustainable Accounting Standards Board, or SASB. To my knowledge, EU and UK promotes the integration of sustainability and ESG concepts into financial decision-making. The European Commission's recent amendments to its financial directives would mandate that investment firms consider ESG preferences for their clients. COVID-19 hasn't deterred the expansion of ESG investing inside the United States. And if anything, the cracks in our system have shown under the stress that we've seen this past year. Still, the U.S. represents only a small amount of global ESG investments. The last time I checked, the EU accounts for about 75% of the share, with the U.S. only at about 20%.
I think that what we have in common is the lack of having a long-term horizon when we invest, and especially when we evaluate what we're doing. I was the CEO a day before for 10 years, and that is one of the public buffer funds in Sweden. And according to the law, we were supposed to invest on a 30 to 40 year horizon, which is something very unique. And the reason being that we should actually be neutral in between generations for people in the system. Unfortunately, we were evaluated on a yearly basis by McKinsey. And even though you have now a track record over 20 years, I have not seen any effort in trying to analyze what has been done over 20 years, what went wrong, what was good, etc., etc. And we know that sustainability short term is a random factor. It can go either way. But we know if we have a horizon of 10 years, we need to actually have that on the agenda, because it will definitely hit our assets one way or the other. So what I see, if I compare to what we did at AP4 2012 and 2013, I mean, it's a huge difference compared to where we are today. But even though I think we need to move even faster, what I'm worried about is that EU is trying to push this, and that's fine. But I mean, they are trying to regulate what is sustainable and what is not. And the problem is with regulations that the target is moving. So what we know today is yesterday's news 2 years from now, and you will always have a gap. So I'm very much in favor of give the mandate, the long-term mandate, try to evaluate on the long term, and then try to have regulation that is more of self-regulation than strict regulations like we have now through EU. And you have the taxonomy that is now playing out in Europe. And it's a book of 420 pages that explains exactly what is green and not green, sustainable and not sustainable. And it's what we know, it's that is not the truth. And I want every pension manager or CEO to actually every day think of what can we do differently? Have things changed? Do we know more? Can we act more consistently going forward, etc.? So I see the huge interest among public. The interest is definitely among politicians as well. And if you talk to people in the private sector companies, I mean, they are eager to actually play their part. But again, I think that we need to find a common ground on this and to coordinate what we're doing. And unfortunately, I don't see a lot of that so far.
I understand that this type of issues related to sustainability is also a value-based discussion, and it's pretty tricky to regulate things like this. But a word that has been in bold in the discussion for a long time is that it's smart regulation, and that gives a driver for sustainability in the right direction. But we may come back to this type of issues, because I think we have something to learn from both of our system, both in US and Europe, and see if we can sort of inspire each other to give the right smart regulation that we need to handle our problem in investment and pension funds, which is one of the key issue for us now to discuss. But I will go back to Mats again, and because you were the CEO of the fourth pension fund, $43 billion pension fund in Sweden. You changed the strategy. Can you tell us why and how and result from your work, Mats?
When I came to it before, I looked at what the law said we were supposed to invest long term. And I thought at that point that 30, 40 years was ridiculous, because I will not be around, so it's going to be held accountable. It also said that you should take ESG into consideration without giving up returns, which I also believe was at that point ridiculous, because you cannot do that. And it's fine actually to give away a few points if that is for the good sake. Then in 2010, I have an old mentor in Sweden, Gary Guy, who came here in the Hungarian crisis in 56, made a fortune in equity investing. And when he turned 80, he started to analyze and be interested in global catastrophic risks. And one of them was climate change. So at one point he asked me, when we met in 2010 or 2011, that Mats, how do you tackle climate change as a long-term investment? I said, I don't know. I don't think it's really my mandate to do that. And on top of that, I don't know if climate change is for real either. And he said, so you don't know if it's real or not? I said, no. And then he started to send me articles and books, and kept on putting questions to me on this. And then I finally came to the point that, I mean, risk is actually probability for something happening, the cost, and then you have the cost of the risk. And even though it might be that it was not 100% sure the climate change was real, still, if you have a low probability, you will still come out that this is a risk that you need to actually mitigate if you're, again, long-term investor. So I decided that I will not invent the wheel again here in Sweden. So I went out, and over 1 year, I met with 10 of the world's 20 largest pension funds. And I asked them, number one, risk, and they all came up with measures that were based on volatility as a risk. And in my view, risk is a permanent capital loss. Then I asked them, what's your exposure to climate change? And none, zero of them had any idea. They hadn't realized that it was a risk, and of course not tried to address that risk either. So I had to go back to Sweden and try to invent the wheel. And I've learned over the years that to try to hire smart people and they will make you look good. So I went to one of the youngsters at the fund and said, Fredrik, I think that climate change is for real. I think that we have mispriced risks in our equity portfolio and probably in the bond portfolio as well. Could you find a way so we can mitigate this or a way to address it? And they came back after a couple of months and said, yes, it's no problem, Matt. So let's get out of fossil. Let's sell everything we have in coal and oil and gas. The problem was at that time, if I'd gone to my board, they would not have given me that mandate because it was a single bet on a single risk that in the short term could turn out badly in terms of performance. And since we were evaluated on a yearly basis, they would not have been able to take that risk. So I said, no, you need to come up with something smarter. And then he came back some 6 months later and said, now I have an alternative that might fit you. So what he done, he took S&P 500, took the carbon footprint for the 500 companies, took out on a sector neutral basis the worst polluters in every sector. By doing that, we ended up with 350 companies where the carbon footprint went down by 50%. And still, the tracking error was 0.7, 0.8, i.e., we really got the same underlying returns. And we had a free option that carbon was wrongly priced, which was our view at that point. So I took that to the board and had some huge discussions where you get to the normal answers. Matt, can you guarantee that all the numbers are right? Blah, blah, blah. And what will you say when journalists call you and this hasn't worked out the way it was? But finally, they gave me the mandate. So we implemented that. And then I went around multi-tour again and trying to get other pension funds to invest in the same way. But none was interested. Then I think had a turning point in addressing climate change was actually COP21 in Paris. Because we started an initiative together with Amundi and UNEP-FI and CDP, where we promised Ban Ki-moon 2014 that we should deliver in Paris 100 billion of pension capital invested or earmarked for climate change mitigation. When we came to September ahead of the Paris meeting, we were at I think 40 billion, whatever it was. We were far away. And I said to myself, it ain't going to work. We're not going to get there. Then in the last month coming up to Paris, we got one after another our pension funds actually join us. So when we came to Paris, I could deliver a coalition called Portfolio Decarbonization Coalition of 30 members controlling more than $3 trillion US, and 800 billion were earmarked for actually trying to mitigate climate change. So that was an enormous success at that point. And I think after Paris, I think that everyone knows about the risk. I think everybody is willing to actually try ways. And the coalition's idea was to come together once or twice a year and then actually share experience from the work we've done in trying to mitigate climate change. It worked out extremely well. So my conclusion is a lot has changed. What we did then is today is mainstream. And I think that if I would have known 2012 what I know today, I would have chosen another strategy as well. And again, I think that pension funds, as been mentioned before here, has a very important role to play. If we're going to manage the transition needed, we need to actually employ the capital we have. And we also know that 15 trillion of fixed income investments a day carry zero or negative interest rates. The possibilities to actually address climate change as an investor or capital allocator has never been better.
I have one general question that you've already talked a lot about in a general sense, but maybe more specifically about the issues that we're talking about are regarding the economic blind spots where we're not actually seeing the data and the actual risks and opportunities in the environment around the capital markets. In other words, beyond the measures that we would typically make in the fiduciary process, there are many different factors that you know are now being brought back into the financial equation. So in terms of the rigorous financial modern portfolio theory analysis, how did you really start quantifying those kinds of risks? And what kind of transformation did you have to do in your analysis and your quant team? And you know, how did you do all of that kind of work to create the data-driven decision-making as well?
My experience is that the academy is a bit behind. And the reason is that we don't have statistics over 20 or 30 or 40 years on these variables. So it makes it a bit harder to actually get support there. But I also believe that what is important, as I said before, is to really make sure that you have the right time horizon when you invest, and make sure that you are evaluated on that basis as well. Then I think that if you want things to happen, it always starts with the boss. And I was totally convinced on that we were doing the right thing. I convinced my CIO, Magnus, and when people at AP4 understood that these guys are actually not letting this go, so there's nowhere to hide, and they're gonna keep tracing us or chasing us as my old mentor Laszlo did. I think that was the turning point, and then we were lucky because once we could start reporting to the board that our strategy on low carbon indices actually worked out extremely well, it actually gave us success return. And then we had a couple of other initiatives, and we were lucky, I would say 9 out of 10, what we did in the field of sustainability turned out to be a positive contributor to the fund's return. So the absolute best way is number one, you need to have the boss on board, and then you need to be a bit brave. And that was at the end of my career. So, I mean, I didn't have a lot to risk, so I was prepared to take that risk at that time. Mm.
So one of the great luxuries of a European funds is that the funding level is usually quite high. So previous generations have managed the money well, and funding is usually near or at 100%. In the United States, that's rarely the case. Most of our funds are 60 to 90% funded right now, and they're having a very hard time understanding the pathway to actually paying distributions for future generations. I see this as a problem in many different ways, but for climate mitigation strategies and asking these funds to make a big shift in their approach when the focus is so much on not just annual returns but quarterly returns in order to make these payments. Do you see this as a roadblock in creating a climate mitigation strategy in some of these U.S. funds?
It's definitely an issue. And I think that you come across this everywhere you go, more or less, more so in US than in Europe, and more in Europe than in Sweden. But I'm still amazed that you are so focused on again the short term and delivery, because we know that, and I think that why we in returns were so successful was because we could give out longer mandates where competition was far less if you compare it to hedge funds, etc. And then to address the question, because we were also asked, what if we need all the money, etc. So we made a very detailed calculation on how much cash do we need to survive 2 years. And then we could set aside that money and have that invested in government bonds and liquid equities. So we could always at every time say we have 2 years of a buffer within the buffer system. And I think that's one way to actually come around the hinder of actually using the long-term bank. Because we know at the same time that pensioners, that when they come to fund, I mean, the duration of their engagement is usually 30 to 40 years. And it's ridiculous if you have your money for that long time in a pension fund that again you your investor or your portfolio manager is having again the horizon of next quarter. It's one of the biggest misalignment I have ever come across.
Well, I think that you really underscored the centerpiece of the issue, where we can even look beyond the social and environmental factors and just look singularly at the time frame disconnect between capital markets and pensions. And then when you do take that long-term approach, these factors must be incorporated, because it's just sound analysis to look at these things. So maybe you could elucidate a little bit more about what you saw were the benefits of incorporating, and what could be done in financial institutions to shift the framework toward more of a long-term view, you know, beyond the quarter to quarter. That would be very interesting based on your experience.
I would probably say that you need to realize the difference between running a portfolio on a yearly basis or a 10-year basis, because it's a totally different ballgame. And once you realize that the opportunities are so much bigger if you can have the 10-year horizon compared to the one-quarter horizon, then the driver for the change will be better returns. And we know that every fund is comparing returns in between and on a quarterly basis, which is ridiculous. But if you get someone, as we did, that actually did something very different. We actually had different returns compared to Tundell. People started to ask, what are you doing? What is the key to success, etc., etc. So just by being the good example, and to me, this world will actually be led by the good examples. So just trying to be one and then make others. And then explain publicly, and we supported some work at the Stockholm School of Economics on this as well. So there are different ways to actually move, but I think the most important element for me in AP4 was that we could actually not only say that we did things more in a more sustainable way, we actually enhanced the returns, and that coming back to there is no conflict between good returns and addressing sustainability in general.
Mats, I have a question also, because I know a little bit more in details of the work you have done. And also, I was amazed about the thinking of, you took a very hard stand on climate strategy in companies that you had an owner interest in Sweden. And you follow that up and see that they implemented your guidelines from your pension fund's value base.
Yeah, I think that one difference between US and Europe, especially Sweden, is that we have a totally different governance structure. I didn't realize that until I started to look around the globe. And very briefly, in Sweden, you have engaged owners. You have a nomination committee consists of the 3 to 4 largest owners, they interview the board, and you only have non-executive directors on the board. And they, in a transparent way, at the AGM, they propose changes, and they have to actually give reasons for why they are sending people in and out. So it's a very clear, and on the AGM, you actually have the full decision to take as an owner. If you come to US, and I don't want to be rude, but I think that the governance structure in US is somewhat different. I think that the board is actually finding themselves, picking themselves, they evaluate themselves, and they remunerate themselves. So it's a totally different. So if you have the structure we have in Sweden, if we were among the 10 largest owners, we could easily get access to the CEO, to the chair, and we could actually raise the issues we had on climate. And of course, they responded. But I mean, and that's totally different. If our opportunity to actually make a difference in US is absolutely nothing. I mean, if I would have called the CEO of Exxon and said, hey, this is Mats Andersson, AP4 Stockholm, I have some serious questions for him. He wouldn't even pick up the phone. So I think you have also an advantage to do this, and you have particularly good toolbox to do it in Sweden. And I had an old idea that you should actually try to find your friends out there that share the same values. So I would like to find the AP4 of US or the AP4 of France or the AP4 of UK. And then I could easily give away the voting rights to the holdings we had in those countries, and they could easily give away their voting rights in Sweden, because that would make my point even stronger in Sweden, and it would for sure increase their possibilities to make a difference in their own home market.
Yeah, maybe what you just said, Mats, could be a segue, because what you just said surrounding voting rights, I presume you were talking about shareholder votes and proxies to influence mm-hmm. companies. Right. So there's a number of regional and state pensions across the U.S. And to identify the pension trustees and management of those pensions that are in alignment with those kinds of values, and then creating, you know, and building on the pre-existing work of the U.S. Social Investment Forum or groups like As You Sow to weave together a coalition along these lines and then find aligned trustees and then start talking about the experiences. Maybe that's something that could be done, but have you done anything in that regard thus far in terms of weaving with other pension people in North America?
We had some discussions with Culpers and Counselors with the coalition, but I mean, they argued at that point fiduciary duty for not addressing climate change. At that point, I think they have changed definitely since I left AP4 and in recent years. But I think it's a low hanging fruit to try to actually collect the believers and join forces with your friends. Because I think together you are stronger. Together, I think you're more able to actually be even more different and try more and take a little bit more risk.
And Kai, I've got a corollary question, because, you know, I think a lot of the kinds of the kind of commentary that we're seeing from pensions and fiduciaries surrounding these issues of fiduciary duty or what have you, is there's a perception that it's either riskier or you're not going to make as much money. But I feel that we all see that there are many, like you just already outlined, many opportunities where there are tangible money-making opportunities that are being overlooked simply because of this myopia or blind spot. So maybe just take a few comments about, you know, about that, and maybe share a little bit about where you see the upside, because this is opportunities lost, and I think that's of great concern.
We were always much stronger when we can join forces a day before with somebody else. Because you got more than two eyes, so to speak, and looking at different opportunities. And also, the larger you became, the more interested the surroundings and potential investment cases were. So we got more, even more proposals, and you were able to share the extra cost, because there is an extra cost if you want to be a responsible long-term owner, definitely. But on the other hand, my experience at that point is that will be paid off by better returns by far. So again, every initiative that can be made, and I also believe that there's not one size that fits all. Let the 100 flowers bloom, and support and again do something, because we all know that we have a mandate, and we can make a difference as investors, be that as a fund or pension fund, whatever. And that mandate we need to activate in a much broader way going forward.
From another perspective of this question of pressures of change, and Greg, if we look at California and also the people who are carrying their pension, or they pay into the pension system, and if you relate that to some sort of shareholder activism, and if you look at the pension in California and their pension funds, are the members or in unions who have an interest in pension funds, are they worried about stranded assets?
That's a good question. To be clear, I don't really know how many of the union or pension participants perceive stranded assets, but I think there's larger concerns about the system and the long-term systemic challenges that we're facing. Of course, you know, the various crises that we've been going through for the last 6 months that I don't need to recount are obviously evidence to almost anybody who is observing that there's something that needs to shift and there's concern. The key becomes how does a pension navigate with investments to address those concerns, especially if those concerns are not in the financial equation. There was something that I remember doing some research, and I'm sure that Nick could share a little bit more about this. The scholarship of the idea of a super fiduciary, a fiduciary that looks beyond just the financial, but looks at the actual lives of the beneficiaries, and in making sure that the investments are in line with what the beneficiaries are going through in their day-to-day lives. In other words, here in CalPERS in California, if they're investing in communities and creating investments that are destructive to the health of the community or the beneficiaries by investing in, you know, pollution or certain kinds of industries that are creating health concerns, that becomes something that should be internalized into the management of the pension, which was where CalPERS started looking. So the question is, how do we then align those kinds of interests? And with the growing concern and awareness on in California in particular, and the West Coast around climate change, there's not much debate about the reality of it here. Then the question becomes, how do we bring the money from the global casino and capital markets back into viable investments here in the state to then address these very concerns and therefore reduce risk along the lines that Nick was pointing out with the forest resilience bond as one of many examples of industries and sectors. So I think that's really, you know, the general respect that I would have for this, but it really needs to be worked out in context. And I'm very excited about the promise of bringing aligned pension managers together to explore these questions.
Well, you have had some changes in the attitudes or strategy and policy when you look at the universities in California, and also demands of divest in fossil fuels from their endowment and pension funds. Is that a growing shareholder activism or opinion around how pension funds works and how universities handle their money?
Well, the divest invest movement that began, you know, nearly a decade ago, and then the discussions around responsible endowments, you know, some of the leading groups like the Responsible Endowment Coalition and others who are student run activists trying to encourage their endowments to invest in the direction that we're talking about. The one of the things that, you know, pension trustees and fiduciaries face is the asset class mismatch between selling large publicly traded companies and then looking toward the alternative in the energy sectors and trying to create a matching investment when they're here or either small company or different kinds of assets. So those kinds of portfolio management concerns have yet to be well addressed. And that's one of the issues of selling large cap stocks and buying venture capital and micro caps or small caps becomes a reorientation toward the conversation and looking at allocation. Similarly, you've seen endowments and, you know, in particular endowments that have invested a large amount of money in private investments in private debt and private equity and pulling money back from the capital markets and the stock market. Then the issue then becomes, how do you find investments that meet these fiduciary concerns for liquidity and return, what have you, but also meet the ESG factors as well? And that's a real opportunity because there's a growing demand. There's cash that's accumulating that really looks, you know, is looking for responsibly invested deal flow, but then that's the responsibility that our industry has, is to then meet that demand by providing better structures for coordinating deal flow for these pensions and institutional investors like endowments. And I know that, Nick, you have a lot of comments along these lines as well.
The first thing I'd say is I believe that the divestment in general is a distraction from some of the greater issues that we're seeing within both endowments and pension funds, and misdirects attention away from the incredible power that these systems have to enact actual change. So divestment has been an issue on campuses for quite some time now. It started out with a school apparel manufacturers being in line with the social position of students, and it's led to divestment from guns and tobacco and other things within the portfolio, all of which are good, but I think they're small steps, and they sort of miss the point in capturing the power of what this capital can actually achieve. So engagement and strategic investment, as opposed to divestment, would provide these funds, which oftentimes have billions of dollars under management, the ability to really reflect the values of their of the student body and the beneficiaries that will be getting money from this pool of assets into the future. So climate change in particular, I think, has coalesced this group of investors and fossil fuel divestments have risen quite drastically in recent years. But the argument is more that investing in fossil fuel companies will inhibit clean energy solutions. I think a better approach would be to view fossil fuel companies as simply a bad long-term bet, filled with stranded assets, as you mentioned, that may never be removed from the earth. Until we reach that point, I think it'd be difficult to actually create change within these portfolios. And despite these recent developments, there are still hundreds of endowments that do not actually have any form of sustainable or responsible investing policy on their book. So a lot of steps need to be taken until we reach this end goal of a super fiduciary. So small steps from as Mats pointed out, to repositioning these funds to allow for a broader mandate, to change the role of the board of directors, to allow for beneficiaries to have a voice, but also to have a voice equally, so that the younger generation who will be receiving money 30 to 40 years down the road has as much say as the older generation who's taking payouts right now.
Mm. Mats, would you like to comment a little bit about this? And what one of the things you talk about is also that you identified businesses that were more progressive or would like to change. And this transition from go from negative investment to some positive change, was it enough with the opportunities when you were driving your pension fund?
I strongly believe that if you sit down and really look at what you're doing and what the everyone around you are expecting from you as a client or investor, whatever, you will have to put sustainability on the agenda. Once you realize, and I think that you need to have the economical force in place. When you realize that if I invest in a sustainable way, I will have a lower cost of capital. And that's because if you can define sustainability in a fairly good way, you can say sustainable investments have a lower risk, and therefore they will need less, the cost of capital will be lower. So I think when they realize, companies or investors, that this is actually a way of mitigating risk again and getting a better return as running a company, it was pretty easy. And looking at California now, I mean, you will at the end of the day have a number on the cost of these fires, and that you must be able to split that into different pots. And I think that part of the cost will actually hit CalPERS and CalSTRS and other pension funds in California. So therefore, sustainability actually, if you do it the wrong way, you will actually have an extra cost, which is actually happening now. And I think the best way, if you really want capital to be reallocated, put a fair price on carbon emissions, and you will have an enormous, enormous reallocation of capital from fossil to renewables and what have we, from companies that are deep into CO2 emissions to others that are more clean. I think it's the best, because again, I mean, sustainability is not charity. It's risk mitigating, and it's a way to enhance your returns long term. Once you can make people understand that, I think that capital will flow.
Well, Nick and Greg, California is the most progressive state and also the one suffering the most with the climate crisis. Are the investment markets ready for change?
Well, I would say first, maybe Massachusetts may have something to say about California being labeled the most progressive state, but we do a good job over here in California. So look, there's always opportunity in crisis. In Chinese, actually, the word crisis literally translates to danger, opportunity. And the state of California has immense wealth, so natural, human, and financial. And we really do need to activate our shared goals to create a long-term vision. And begin planning for what that vision would be. We need to imagine what sorts of companies we'll have in 100 years and support those companies as best as we can. We need to build communities that we want our great-grandchildren to live in. And finance is one toolkit that can make this possible. Through leveraging the commonalities of our state and local governments, investors, and communities, we can create mechanisms to co-create our future. Governments, in their part, need to encourage novel financial solutions to crowding capital and allow for local investments. That's number one. LTIs, especially pension funds, need to have the ability to pursue value-driven investment avenues within the state, and communities need to have a voice in this process. So the alignment between the government, the public investors, the private investors, and the community, I think that alignment and that dialogue really needs to strengthen in order to solve some of our local problems. I'm optimistic, but there's a lot of work to do. And this work needs to be spearheaded by public investors like the big pension funds we have here. Private investors need to have a role in how this is done. And the government really needs to take a leading role. The federal government has taken a step back and are quite conservative about pension fund policy right now. The state needs to take a role in allowing money to crowd into these using the current framework. Instead of throwing it all out and hoping for the best, I think we really do need to use the pieces of our financial system to increase the probability of success down the road. What this looks like is a growth in public-private partnerships and other novel finance mechanisms that will allow for communities to really have access to the pools of capital that are sitting at their doorsteps.
So, Greg, how we can build confidence and competence for a change that take pension fund system into a more sustainable future?
Well, thank you. I think what Nick was saying regarding this partnership between public sector and private markets and citizens and members of the unions all need to come together and look at the long-term factors and weave together viable solutions in a very cogent way. And some of the concerns that we've addressed in the last 10 years or seen arise in the last 10, 20 years in the questions around public-private partnerships have surrounded the concerns of labor and environmental groups around ensuring that their values are being instituted in these kinds of projects and these kinds of joint powers authorities or what have you. So the ideas of looking at benefit corp kind of models or really internalizing into the governance of every one of these types of institutions or projects or coalitions to manage assets, to manage economic activity, to manage infrastructure, to design pathways for our state by internalizing these formally into the structures, whereas in the past they were left as optional management decision processes rather than internalized into the charters and the governance of these partnerships and things like that. That might enable all the stakeholders to come together more effectively to design a process of decision-making and governance. And back to what Mats was referring to with respect to the green bond taxonomy, it's an important framework that is a starting point that California can also design our own nuanced framework, effectively our own language for our own types of projects, and then bring together these nuanced definitions that customize the European taxonomies and ideas and the global best practices, and then make it more relevant to what is going on here on the ground in the communities and cultures. And then from there, bring economic coalitions and financial actors and the stakeholders in all dimensions of the state together to then design a new pathway forward. And then using the capital in the manner that Nick was talking about, to drive capital into these new structures. That's really the work ahead. And that's some of the things that we're focused on here in California Forward and the Milken Institute and other groups that we work closely with. And there's much to share there. Maybe that's the subject of another podcast. But those are my thoughts with respect to all of those ideas.
I will say thank you to all of you for your collaboration around such an important issue as pension fund and the capital market. And I see we have covering a lot of questions that we will come back to, and everything from brave leadership, governance structure, long-term thinking, but of course collaboration. And I think that this exchange of experience between Europe and California could give a little bit of a drive for our conversation further on. So stay in tune with the Transformers website, kaiembren.org, and also come back and take part of the discussion and we move forward. Thank you, all of you, Mats, Nick, and Greg.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kai, and you're welcome. Thank you very much for including us.
Thanks a million. It's been great.
I'm Kai Embren. Follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn, where I will be announcing the future guests to this podcast. And you can expect about 2 programs a month. And each guest has a unique story of making business and society sustainable. So find out more. Visit my homepage, kaiembren.org. Thank you for listening.